Pastors Hart and Dominic Steele here. Thanks so much for joining us. Today we're talking about the road back, and our guests are Gary Koo, Bishop of the Anglican Church in Western Sydney, but also heading the Sydney Anglican Church's COVID-19 task force, and Adam Lowe. Adam is the Senior Minister of St Bart's at Toowoomba in Queensland, but in a former life he was an organisational psychologist, really specialising in that whole area of organisational development and change. We'll come to them in just a moment. But before we do, we'd need your help, and we'd like your help in regards to the Pastor's Heart. I am encouraged at the number of people who are starting to back us, and if you could get the word out, tell your peers in ministry about the Pastor's Heart, but also if you're able to help us by going to www.patreon.com/thepastorsheart and joining us as a financial partner. We're not yet self-sufficient. There's a little team that work on this, and we're wanting your help. We're wanting to grow. And if you could do that, then that would just be great. Gary, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dominic.
And Adam Lowe, thanks for joining us from Queensland.
Hi.
Adam, if we could start with you and the whole strategy. We've got a crisis, but it's an opportunity for, well, strategic change.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that this entire crisis has been so challenging in so many different ways, yet it's also precipitated enormous and rapid change. And so local churches in particular have gone through a rate of change like they haven't done in recent memory. Ever, that's right. Unprecedented, almost unprecedented. And so that's really driven an extraordinary amount of change very suddenly. Typically in an organisation or a community group or a church, when you want to initiate change and lead change, it takes a lot of pre-work. So you have to create the conditions that are ready for change. We haven't had to do that. It's been thrust upon us, and so people have responded, and that means now we've gone through a rapid change, which opens up the opportunity to think about more intentionally how we express our mission as churches.
So on the diagram we've got on the screen, and I know a lot of people listen to the Pastor's Heart, but actually there's a series of diagrams that you've helped produce that are going to be, actually, if you are listening, you should just go to thepastorsheart.net and come and watch this discussion, because it'll be much more helpful to see the diagrams that Adam's got here. We've been moved out of the normal into a new position, and we're there now, but we're waiting for a trigger. And the triggers really are, well, the government's announcement of going back to 10, the government's announcement of going back to 20, and the Australian government's announcement of meetings of 100, and then actually for some larger churches, it's going to be a further down the track trigger. But what are the options open for us as church leaders, Adam?
I think that's a great question, and that is the question for us to be thinking about in our teams and our local settings. I think for us, as we were thinking about it as a team, we thought in this horizon, in this period as we await for those triggers, we had almost conceptualized it as a holding pattern until we can get back to the way things were, because that's the default way of thinking as people and in organizations and systems. But we realised that actually this is an opportunity to be ready for whatever is next. And so as we think about what are we getting ready for, there are four scenarios if we want to step through them. The four scenarios, really the default scenario, because the way we are wired is that it's a bit like an elastic band. We've been stretched out and we've had to really implement a lot of change. And so the default way of behavior is that we would almost snap back to that as soon as we can. As soon as the triggers allow us, the things are released in order that we can get back to the way things were. And that's really scenario A, which I've called recover.
Just to jump in there, I imagine, Gary, you're getting a lot of ministers say to you, I want to jump back to how things were.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a comfort in that. That's what we know, how to do things, and you know, there's that illusion of normality going back to where we were before.
What's scenario two, Adam?
So the second scenario is reinvention. So that really focuses on the key question of what brand new place shall we go. So that doesn't long for getting back to the way things were, but to a brand new place. And I think that's a fairly unlikely scenario for most churches, but it will be for some other external organisations which everything has changed. So that's the second scenario. What brand new place shall we go?
Can you think of any churches for which that would be the dominant paradigm?
I've thought about this a bit and none come particularly to mind. I think often some churches have, and some leaders that I've spoken to have said, we are going to go in a totally new direction and continue this whole trajectory of change. And as I've reflected with them and said, well, actually, are you going to keep on reading the Bible? Are you going to gather for worship in some form? Is prayer going to be still part of your community? Are there still a core set of beliefs that you're going to hold to? And they say, oh, of course, all those things. And so actually, there is a whole core of things that people are going to keep coming back to and have continued in many ways. And so I can actually think of very few scenarios in which there's total reinvention, in the church at least.
So you're thinking scenario three is going to be what most of us are going to be doing. Do you want to unpack that?
That's right. So the third scenario is reframe. And that really focuses on the question, what can we learn and adopt from this? So it recognises that actually we do want to get back to a whole heap of things which are so helpful for expressing life as Christian community that we can't do in the current context. And so we want to get back to that. But also recognise that actually things have changed. But also we've realised there are ways of doing things that are more helpful, perhaps missionally, that we want to adopt or integrate or really shift from what we've previously been doing. And so that is a mix that recognises we are getting back, but we're also learning and adopting from what we have been doing right now.
Mm-hmm. And scenario four?
The fourth scenario is release, and that really is asking the question of how do we finish well? So for some communities, they will have reflected in this period that actually this is a natural point for the end of the life of our community in this form. And so the key question is, how do we finish well? So that will be a real question that have been faced by some local churches, maybe not immediately, but in the future. Perhaps they were already facing that question, but hadn't yet articulated it or been willing to recognise it. And so now that's a question for them to focus on.
Now, these diagrams you've just shown us, you originally prepared them for your St. Bart's staff team to help you guys process this. You came up with a series of questions that really are the questions for scenario three that you thought your team ought to address. Could you take us through them?
Sure, happy to. So we've been trying to think about this as a team, obviously pray about this as a team. And so there are so many questions that you can ask, but we've just tried to focus on three questions. And it's helpful to ask these questions both at a ministry level, so that the ministry portfolio that you might be responsible for, but also as a leader as well. And so the three questions are, the first question is, during this period, this rapid change period, what have you stopped doing? So what have you stopped doing that you don't want to go back to? Not because you just personally don't want to do it, but in relation to your mission. This is all related to your mission, that actually you realize this isn't actually the most effective or helpful thing that we've been doing. So what have you stopped doing that you don't want to go back to? The second question is, what have you changed? So what have you changed that you want to continue on with in some form? And the third question is, what have you started that's brand new that you really would love to adopt now because you think it's so helpful with regard and in connection to your mission as a church? So they're the three questions.
I'm very interested in a moment to come back and ask what are some of your reflections at St. Bart's Toowoomba on that. But I might come to you, Gary, for a moment. And you've been talking to a lot of ministers and a lot of people talk to you about their answers to those three questions. What are some of the things that you've heard people have learnt, reflected on those topics?
Yeah, thanks, Dominic. There have been a lot of things that people have been discovering during this time. I think early on, one thing that people were surprised by was the whole issue of access. So I remember the first week when I was at a Rouse Hill Anglican and a message came through from this lady who had not been able to come to church for over a month, and was delighted that she could now come. So for people with who are vulnerable, people we have access issues, people are unwell, people are in situations of life who can't come to church, being online has provided opportunities. But not only that, I think we've seen in quite a few scenarios where even after analysing how long people have been online, that there are actually more people coming to the virtual doors of our church than the physical doors, more than we expected. So that's been just access is something which I think we've had to consider. Back to what Adam was saying, I think this has been a time for simplicity. You know, so we've had to kind of work out what are the fundamentals of our ministry and focus on those at this time, which then brings in the question, should we restart some of the things we've stopped doing? I think that's a really important question to ask. And I think the third thing, the third reflection I've heard is the importance of connection. People really miss meeting physically in a way they might not have realised Sunday by Sunday. And I've seen many churches actually start developing systems that they might not have otherwise had for pastoral care and making sure everybody is in contact with somebody else.
What are some of your thoughts there, Adam?
Well, we're still working through all of this, I have to say. I think everything Gary has said is so helpful. There's probably a number of reflections. A key few reflections we've had is one, it really has helped us focus, and particularly through the lens of discipleship. So our mission as a local church is to make and mature disciples. And so this has helped really focus the lens of that even more, because we can't do everything. Not only because we're restricted, because we just can't in terms of how you engage people. So that simplicity and focus on our mission. The second has been something that's changed, which is there's a whole range of roles that we never had before. So having people who are moderating during live streams, we have people who are far more active on social to try and get people engaged who might be dislocated otherwise. And so there's a whole heap of new roles which have opened up opportunities for engagement. And so that's something we've learned and started, which we'll be reflecting on, thinking about how we incorporate that into the future. And that also fits before and after a service as well. And then the third area, which really has been quite new for us, is the way in which we've been using video communications far more intentionally during the week and before the service to increase engagement, but to really help people tap into a lot of the discipleship resources that our team have been developing, both in small groups, but also in us and Bart's kids. So how we communicate that really clearly through video. So that's something we need to think about, of what's sustainable and what is the most helpful going forward now.
Now, as we think about Adam's diagram, and we're in the now and we're looking forward to the trigger, and whether we think of the trigger as, I'm just thinking about, Prime Minister Morrison's groups of 10 or groups of 20 or groups of 100, what are some of the things you want to just say we need to be thinking about in terms of that 10, 20 and 100?
Because of my medical background, I'm just trying to think. I think there's some public health considerations that we need to take into account, you know, just in terms of being prepared. It was great coming here and seeing a sign in the front door talking about social distancing and hygiene. So having clear signage, having a safe space, you know, in terms of cleaning, having things set out properly.
And people are going to feel much more reassured when they walk into the building of a church if those signs are up.
That's right.
Clear leadership. Just a thing saying the toilet doors are being kept open so you don't need to touch the toilet doors, those kind of things.
I think for us as ministers, as we go through the stages, there is probably a good exercise in visualisation. What might church look like at 10, at 20, at 100, and then putting things into place or preparing to put things into place for that eventuality?
Now, this number 10, because I've seen a little bit of chatter in the ministers' Facebook groups, does that mean 10 on the live stream crew plus 10 worshippers, or does it mean 10 in total in the building? How do you read the number 10?
The New South Wales government's been saying to us, common sense applies. So I think if you have a plain reading of the rules would mean 10
in
total.
The building, yeah.
10 in total.
And so you want to run a Bible study group in your church? I mean, where we are in Sydney, most lounge rooms are pretty small, and you haven't really got a chance of doing 10 people. I mean, you can only have 5 people to your home.
Yeah.
I presume you think of a Bible study group as a home visit rather than as a religious service. So that prompts the question, would we start to run a religious service on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, which is actually Bible study where we meet for reading the Bible and prayer? Can we run more than one on the site?
No, I don't think it's 10 in total.
On the site at the moment.
So I think place of worship is defined as the whole site.
And when we talk 10, 20, 100, we're talking persons, not adults with ancillary children.
No, in total.
In total. Okay. So when we get to this point of 100 people, and the Prime Minister says he's hoping to get there in July, I mean, even now, that sounds completely out there. Just that's so foreign from how we're operating at the moment. But I think the mood's going to change as school rolls back. Do you want to comment on that?
I guess school is the rate limiting step. It really comes down to how well schools perform in terms of whether that actually increases the risk of infection in our community. So all these steps are related to infection rate and numbers of people who have the infection. So I think schools, because there's a massive population, is going to be a real determining factor in how these steps progress.
So paint me the picture. Church of 100. What's it going to look like for some of the... I mean, you've obviously had a little scenario of it'll work like this in one of my small churches in my region. It'll work like... Take me through some of those size churches.
For a church of 100 to meet at the one time in the one place, you need a reasonable size auditorium, don't you? You know, with the 4 square metres. So I think that's something that people need to take into account. And for the larger churches, 100 is not big enough. So how are they going to run church? They'll have to split their congregations up. How are they going to split the congregations up?
So you're hearing chatter of people planning to split congregations?
I think people are starting to think about it. And what I'm saying back to them is it's not 100% straightforward, because there are issues in regards to clean between services and the movement of people between services that people need to take into account. I think one of the big factors that we haven't got 100% clarity on yet is, if you look at the three-step framework, the government's also requiring the gathering of contact details for each meeting. And we're not exactly sure what that means.
But it would be wise to plan.
Absolutely.
Would be wise to plan check-in stations at the entrance to church.
Absolutely.
Think through the technology of how to do that now.
Absolutely. So provision of hand sanitizer, signage, welcoming procedure. How do you welcome someone who's only ever been to our church online? You know, thinking through that, what's the experience going to be like? There's lots of things for us to be thinking through now for that time. And also, I guess the other thing is, how are we going to restrict numbers to 100 if we usually have more than 100? Do we need ticketing?
One of the complexities is the whole video thing, and running online service as well as analog real life service. What have you thought about that, Adam?
We're still obviously wrestling with this and seeing what might be possible, but really we keep coming back to the question, what is most helpful with regard to our mission? When we first sat down and set goals around what we would love for the Life Our Community to look like, we said, well, we already understand that Life Our Community is expressed as we gather, grow, give and serve. And so how can we maintain as much normality as possible, but re-express in a different form? I think when it comes to the live streaming of services, it's really important for us that we recognise that it's a gathering opportunity as the people of God. And so as we're live streaming, that this is not a show, it's not a spectator opportunity where you're just a fishbowl type activity. And so even as the numbers change, we're expecting some sort of hybrid model in which we have people gathered and also live streaming. We're a larger church and with a high number of children as well. And so we want to ensure that actually we're gathering all of those people and not just spectators from a distance peeking in to what's happening in the physical space.
Gary, just a point of clarification. We talked about the trigger back to 100. How long should we plan for 100 to be in place? Obviously we're crystal balling.
Yeah.
But but we have to, I mean, should we think of it as weeks or should we think of it as months? Because we're actually going to think of different plans.
I think we need to think medium to long term. I think at least months. What the government, well, the New South Wales state government has been saying is that we won't have mass gatherings until there's a vaccine. And I assume they will, by that implication, a vaccine or a treatment. But we may be some distance away from having that.
So that would mean one should plan, if you can, to see if you can... I mean, one of the options is to, even though you are allowed to gather with 100 people, will you keep streaming? And I think some of the bigger churches are potentially going to need to do that. But for some of the churches, I mean, we have a lot of churches in Australia that are under 200, you know, and some of them will be able to start meeting.
So as an organisation, as a denomination, we're going to provide guidelines, understanding that each parish context is different. So we want to give people guidelines and principles. And I think for the churches will need to work out what's best for their mission in this current environment.
Adam, what are some of the other things you're workshopping as a team at the moment?
First and foremost, we're really reflecting what can we learn and adopt going forward. But then we're really trying to think through the different stages, and we're waiting for the guidelines of our own diocese as well to be released and how we interact and respond to those. We want to be good citizens in every way. We're also really trying to think about how can we refocus us in terms of discipleship. And so right now, for example, one of the key reflections we've just been talking about in terms of small groups, that obviously five people in a group and some people are more vulnerable, so that might not be possible. But actually, this is an opportunity for us to perhaps reflect and say, in this interim period, can we use this opportunity to double the number of our small groups? Because we can start seeding new groups and splitting groups that are smaller, and then that readies them in a great position in that great anticipation when we can have more people gathering to grow those groups and start more groups. So that can be a terrific catalyst. So we're just thinking through that right now, and there are things that we will be able to begin doing very soon, hopefully.
That's really helpful, because I think if I come behind the principle, or the principle behind what you've just said, you think, what's the decision now precipitated by this crisis that will actually set us up for a better long-term win, given the direction we're really hoping
to go? One of the guiding principles and questions we've been asking is, what can we do now, or do it in a way that anticipates and foreshadows the future most helpfully? So we don't want to start anything really that we don't intend to carry through, or change a form that we can't at least adapt in some way that puts us in a better position missionally in the future.
Which helps us think about whether or not we should, what congregational shape we should go for on Sunday. We want to, at least if we are going to put on a congregation at a particular time because we need to have a maximum cap of 100, we want to think, well, is that a place I'd like a congregation to be in the future? And how have you gone? What are we hearing from people on that?
I think it's still early days with people working through what their configurations will be. But I think what Adam's saying is right. We should, what we start, well, we should be starting the way that we want to continue, which is actually effective for mission. But again, I think there are certain complexities for larger churches.
So what are you hearing from the larger churches? I know you've got a meeting planned tomorrow with them. Or Thursday.
I think it's very much like what Adam is saying. We're at a stage of looking back and forward at the same time. What have we learned? What is each step going to look like for us? How are we going to set ourselves up for the future and make decisions now that we don't have to change? So, you know, and again, people are analysing, what does step one look like? What does step two look like? What does step three look like? What lies beyond that? And I think there is a realisation that, this is opportunity, but there's also a sense that our hand has been forced. It's unlikely that we will go back to where we were before.
And we don't want to.
No. Yeah. And again, one of the things that someone has commented to me is that we have more contact with our neighbours and our community with the gospel now than we seem to have before. And why? Let's have a think about that. And can we continue this on the other side of this?
One of the things, I don't know if you've thought about this, Adam, we were having a little brainstorm in one of our teams this last week about I mean, we like you have been excited at the increased regularity of our members and just increased numbers overall. As we've marked the roll, watching our stream and in community group, we've seen some fringy people become much, much more regular this season. And I just worked out, actually, when we go back to, they're likely to be the people who are dropping out. And if we could actually write down the list of people who used to be really fringy and now have become really regular, they're going to be the people we're going to need to particularly hold their hand as we go through this next, so that they stay with us as we go through this next season. Have you thought of other things like that that have fallen into our lap that we don't want to let go of?
Yeah. Well, I think the pastoral care networks that churches have developed, I think have been really valuable. We've seen so many people sticking their hand up saying, yeah, I'm willing to stay in touch with these people. So,
what have been the best ones you've seen?
I think they've all been very good. I think there's been a real sense of, I mean, from our background, Dominic, we always kind of like went through the role to make sure that everybody was thought of and prayed for throughout the week. And I think some churches haven't been doing that, but they've gone back to that, looking through who is actually part of our community and making sure everyone is included in thoughts and prayers. And I think that's been really, really good.
Mm. Adam?
I think two things that I've noticed that have been really helpful. One, those people on the fringe who it's much safer for them to check things out. Families who, some of the families will have people who are believers and some not, yet they're all engaging. That's been quite phenomenal. We do always have a hope that we can connect those people in the future to a local church if they're dislocated from Toowoomba. That would be our ultimate hope. But we still want to, so we're being active now in how we can engage and get to know those people. We can link them in. The second thing we've noticed, which has been incredibly helpful for our mission, is that our people who already, I think, have a great invitational culture have just stepped up, not only in loving acts, but also in speaking to their friends about Jesus, but also inviting their friends to services and or other activities online. And so it's been quite incredible the number of people who are coming along in response to invitation so readily and have actually stuck around. So the question really for us is, how do we continue to engage those people, but more than just engagement, how do we disciple those people and help them to continue along a discipleship pathway and learn and come to know Jesus more? So that's really the question for that group that we're really looking to explore far more intentionally, especially in the coming weeks.
Gary, what's your sense of how churches are going financially now?
It's a mixed story, Dominic. I think I've heard quite a few stories of parishes where giving has gone up during this period. It's been really heartening to see people continue to be generous. It's been heartening to see some of our communities where electronic giving was said, I could never do that. But during this crisis, people have stepped up to the plate and started doing that. So that's been really good. I think the churches which have relied heavily on rental income, or external income from weddings and the like have been impacted. But our fears about how many churches would be under severe financial pressure haven't eventuated at this point. Although it's early days, so the economic impact of the lockdown may not be felt for a little bit in terms of unemployment and reduced hours.
Where I feel a little nervous is March next year. In terms of, I think here, we have a churn of around 25% to 30% each year, and that the people leaving, that's all been slowed down. People have stayed with us wherever they are. They've stayed with us. But people are like you. We've had people join, Adam, but they've joined from Newcastle or from the South Coast and all these electronic places, and so they're not likely to stay with us long term, and we'll have to help them into other local churches. But I'm just worried about what'll happen in terms of numbers and giving in next year. I have that concern that the Apostle Paul had for the churches. Hey, thanks very much, gentlemen, for coming in and talking to us. Adam Lowe, Adam, the senior minister of St Bart's Toowoomba and a former organisational psychologist, and Gary Koo, Bishop of Western Sydney of the Anglican Church in Sydney and heading the Sydney Anglican Church's COVID-19 task force. You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next Tuesday. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.